Welcome to the 70th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida, and I'm sharing people's plant-based journeys and all about the wellness that you can achieve with a whole food plant-based diet. Today is an interesting episode for me. It combines everything that I like. It combines dogs and success stories and plant-based nutrition. And so it's just a great tale. The gentleman that I'm so lucky to be able to interview is named Eric O'Gray. And I saw his success story on Forks Over Knives. I also saw it posted somebody shared it on Facebook, NPR story. Eric was grossly overweight and, kind of hit bottom and, as fates align, was told by a naturopath doctor to go out and get a dog and start walking. And so this is the story of a man and his dog and a journey to health and now a journey to pay it forward. And so I'm really excited to bring you his story today. As you know, anything about a dog is right up my alley, and as a cat too. I have Vinny the cat sitting here with me as we're recording, but every morning I run with the two dogs. Sometimes I run with them together, but when I have more sense, I take one at a time, and I run a couple laps with one dog. I run a few miles or whatever my mileage is. I split it up between the two dogs. And the other morning I was running and I saw a guy that, we have what we call snowbirds down here in Florida. People come and spend the winter. And he said, "Didn't I just see you running with another dog?" And it's like, "Yeah, I do laps." And he was kind of blown away that, I'm out here running dogs. And I said, "I don't know if I'm running the dogs or the dogs are running me, but it works out on both fronts, because, in the morning, sometimes if you don't want to get up and get out for a run, I know that the dogs, really need their exercise and they really love it and, get their frustrations out and I get my frustrations out. So even if we start out slow and don't really want to go, by the time we get out, it's just so fun to see them happy and watch their gait. And, it's just a great time. So we all end up when the sun's coming up in the morning and everybody's happy and ready to come in for breakfast. So it's all good. On a marathon front, I finished the Napa Valley Marathon a while back. And so my plan in my head was to just do some short runs and then gradually start back into swimming and gradually start back into biking, getting ready for Ironman Louisville that's in the fall. And maybe consider doing some shorter stuff just to try to get some speed back in my legs after having been injured. And that all took a pretty good turn earlier this week when I got offered a spot into the Ironman Florida 70.3 by Epic Cycles. So that's a great opportunity that I can't really pass up. So I went back to the pool this morning and jumped in and did my hour and a half workout and live to tell about it. So it'll be a training day. It's not going to be a stellar performance, but I hope I can, make it through and enjoy the day. So I'm looking forward to that up in Haines City, Florida. And we'll see how it goes. I'm going to take a long bike ride to make sure I can get that in this week. We did a bike ride last weekend and not as long as it needs to be, but hopefully we'll be able to get the bike long enough to be able to make it through the course anyway. And then I'll go back to some short stuff because I dreadfully need to try to get some speed back into my legs. I've also been doing weight training and added yoga to my, trying to do yoga 2-3 days a week. Even if it's 10 to 20 minute long little sequences of things, I think it does good to quiet the mind. But, my age, it's good to kind of get stretched out and get the kinks out. So I think that's helped me. And certainly the weight training helps. Just again, keeping the core strong, keeping your legs strong and, trying to do a little bit. It's difficult to incorporate it, but it's all good. I gave a talk this week at the local Catholic ladies' luncheon. And I actually cook for them. And the funny part about it was Doctor's Day. And so I'm proud to say that as for Doctor's Day, I actually cooked for others. So that was good. And I made the my mother's, we call it cabbage unrolled. So it's basically cabbage rolls if you're, you know, of Polish descent, where you wrap cabbage, you wrap, traditionally it was hamburger and rice and tomatoes and cabbage, but we use rice and beans and tomatoes and cabbage. And instead of rolling it all up, just kind of chop it all up and put it in a casserole dish and make it that way. And I made him a kale salad. And then I made a chocolate cake without any oil and was whole wheat pastry flour. So, you know, I had to entice them a little bit with some sweet, but a lot of people never had kale, and certainly they'd never had a completely vegetarian lunch at the for their luncheon. So I did a little talk, so that was good. I also talked at the local hospital. It went well. On my nutrition class, we went shopping both at a health food store and at the local supermarket. And it's always fun to take a group of people through the supermarket and watch people, you know, stare as we're doing some sort of a tour guide type of tour. But everybody learned something, and it's great fun, and I think everybody enjoyed it. So I think without further ado, I'm going to get into the interview with Eric O'Gray. And I'll give you his website information afterwards. So please enjoy your time with Eric. Welcome, Eric O'Gray. I a fellow listener gave me your name. And I watched the NPR video and was awestruck and touched. And I said, this is a guy that represents a journey not unlike myself, not unlike my patients, that I think my listeners would like to hear. So welcome, Eric.
Thank you very much. It's great to talk to you.
So, you know, we were talking just a little bit before it all got started. You've had a weight problem most of your life, on and off diets, and nothing much would work. And so tell my listeners what kind of, you know, hit you over the head and said something's got to change.
Well, I've struggled with weight my entire adult life. I've been overweight or obese for over 25 years. And the problem is just it's insidious the way that it creeps up on you. You know, just a pound of fat is 3,500 calories, and just 200 calories at a time that you're overdoing on a daily basis or not doing adds up to maybe a pound a month, about 10 pounds a year, and suddenly in a decade you're 100 pounds overweight, which is a situation that happened to me. So I just kept buying larger clothes and thinking that this was part of life, and just kept becoming more miserable and more miserable. My weight kept getting more out of control. And I got to the point that it just became really, I became really isolated. It became difficult to move. All of my joints hurt all the time. I was just miserable in every aspect of my life, and I became very isolated. And when you become obese, as I was, about 140 pounds overweight at the time, it's like a snowball rolling downhill. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and the problem keeps getting worse and worse and worse, and it becomes harder to resolve it. So in my case, the thing that brought me to the point that I had to take action, my call to action, was I had to go to a business trip, and coming home from the business trip, it's so miserable traveling when you're that big, because for many reasons, walking down the aisle in the plane, really, you're seeing the glare of every person on the plane looking at you, and looking at you with that look of fear in your eye, in their eye, like, oh my God, is he going to sit next to me? And then finally, when you get to your seat, and especially if you're sitting next to a couple guys, it is pretty miserable. Men don't like to touch each other when they're flying. And sitting down in the seat, there's nothing that you can do in the small airline seat but to prevent yourself from spilling over the armrest and really touching the people next to you for the entire flight. So it's a miserable experience. And also the other real problem is my weight had crept up to the point that my waist size is about 52 inches. And at that size, a standard airline seat belt won't fit. So the only way that you can fly is with seatbelt extensions. So on my flight coming home on that business trip that day, they ran out of seatbelt extensions and they didn't have one for me, and they had to delay the flight. So my flight was delayed by about 45 minutes because I couldn't buckle into the seat, and this was well known by everybody around me. And the flight attendants were scurrying around, and they don't have seatbelt extensions, or they don't keep them extra in the airline or at the gate. What they had to do is they had to send over to another plane to get them. So that just created a situation of delay. And the guy sitting next to me, a Korean gentleman, said something to the effect of he was going to miss his flight because I was too fat. It was pretty direct, actually. He looked at me and says, "You're too fat. I missed my flight." So it's one of those. Anyway, so that was very humiliating. And, you know, it was the truth, though, and I took it as the truth. And I actually wasn't even offended that he said it, because I like when people tell me the truth. But I got home, and the very next day, I turned on the TV, and this was back in 2010, even before Forks Over Knives came out, and I saw President Clinton on TV being interviewed by Wolf Blitzer, talking about a plant-based diet and the China study. And I had never heard of these things before, and at the time, I had failed every fad diet and every diet that was ever commercially done in the United States, really everything, Nutrisystem, the Atkins diet, all these different diets. And all these different diets had in common was that I could attempt to follow them, and I would lose some weight, like 30 or 40 pounds, really try to stick to it and using my maximum willpower to stick to it, but none were sustainable in the long run. And what happened was, at some point I would backslide. Like, for example, with Atkins, it's a diet where you only eat meat with a very small amount of, like maybe asparagus or something as vegetables. But you're really primarily, you're eating over 90% animal protein on Atkins. And doing that, you just start craving things like French fries and potatoes and things that you want. You just, the craving becomes overpowering. And at the point that you backslide, you fall out of the diet, and then it's very difficult to get back on it again. So when I backslid, I not only gained what I'd lost from the diet in each one of these cases, but also, you know, usually an additional 10% back. So I just kept doing this and spiraling and getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But back to the story. So I saw President Clinton on TV, and he was talking about a plant-based diet. So I looked this up. I Googled this, and this was in 2010. I Googled plant-based diet, and nothing came up. Now, that's extraordinary, because if you Googled plant-based diet in 2016, you'd get hundreds of thousands of hits. So this is how far we've come in the last 5 or 6 years. So I was able, through some research, to find somebody in my area that was a naturopathic doctor, Dr. Preeti Kulkarni in Cupertino, California, who was a naturopathic doctor and nutritionist, and she was vegan. So I went and I talked to her, and what she was able to do for me really made the difference. She came over my place and, you know, coached me on what to throw out of my pantry and what to start purchasing at the supermarket, provided me with lesson plans, and really made me commit to a long-term 6-month program whereby I agreed to go in and make weekly visits with her that included weigh-ins and discussing everything that had and hadn't worked for the week, and really to, you know, evaluate and keep this as a moving target. So starting from about 340 pounds, I followed her advice, and I began losing 3 to 5 pounds a week magically. I mean, I just thought that this was the most amazing thing that I'd ever experienced in my life. This was the first thing that I'd ever done that had worked, a whole foods plant-based diet, which consisted of, you know, purchasing the food in the form that it came, you know, it came out of nature rather than being processed and, you know, additionally packaged and all that. And then eliminating processed sugar and oils. So by doing all those things, I dropped I went from between 320 and 340 down to 180 in about 8 or 9 months. And it completely changed my life, and everything about my life changed after that. And it was just, it was extraordinary.
Wow. And so she also told you to go get a shelter dog.
Yeah, and this is the most important thing, and this is what the video that I'm currently in is based upon. The first thing that she told me to do, in addition to all the nutritional things that we did, well, she knew that we talked for a long time, but she knew that I'd become very isolated and I'd stopped going outside a lot. And I, you know, really wasn't maintaining contact with friends, and I just was really holed up in my home most of the time. And in talking about it, we identified that the only time that I was really getting outside was as required for business. And the rest of the time, everything that I was eating was either delivered to my home or handed to me through the window of my car at a fast food restaurant. And she identified the most key thing, the most key important thing, in addition to the nutrition that she identified, was to start getting at least some light exercise on a daily repetitive basis. Because, as she said, if you're not getting exercise and you have improper nutrition, you have to get exercise and proper nutrition for your metabolism to work correctly for you to lose weight and regain your health. So I did that. She recommended that I go down to the my local Humane Society and adopt a dog. So I did that, and I called them up, and I didn't know what I was doing because I'd never owned a pet before. And I called them up, and I asked for an obese middle-aged dog so that we would have something in common. And I didn't really know what to picture. I was thinking about some small, cute dog. And what they paired me with was a dog who was 7 years old and who was obese and who had was a special needs dog and had some issues. And I looked at him, and he looked as bad off as I did. And he looked at me, and I don't think that he was too thrilled by my sight either. But in thinking about it, I think we both needed each other more than anybody else in the world. And so I agreed to adopt him, and I took him home. Actually, I slept on it first, and I decided, yes, this is the right thing to do. So I picked him up, and I took him home. And we very slowly, over a period of days, formed a bond. And on the third night, he jumped in my bed with me. And after that, he never slept on the floor again. So we formed a really tight bond. And the thing that made it work, in my case, the weight loss, in addition to the nutrition, was being forced by Petey, like it or not, I couldn't be lazy. He required that I go outside and walk him at least a couple of times a day. So I started walking Petey for a half an hour twice a day, and I want to tell you that I lost all of my weight without doing any form of extreme exercise, any running or anything like that, just through a whole food plant-based diet and walking Petey for a half an hour twice a day. It was after I lost my weight that I picked up running and became athletic and started doing all those things that I now really enjoy doing.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it was... you know, it was a great, great, great video. And they found it was, again, the Silicon Valley Humane Society had a contest. Is that how the video got started?
Yeah. So it's Silicon, not Silicon Valley Humane Society. So it's actually the name is Humane Society Silicon Valley. And what they did was, they, for a marketing campaign they're doing, they created a new foundation called Mutual Rescue, and they're at mutualrescue.org. And what they did was they came up with a marketing campaign, and what they wanted to do was feature the stories of people that have had that adopted a pet and had a major life transformation because of that. And because of my story, I had kept touch with them after that's who I adopted Petey from. So I kept in touch with them, especially their marketing person, because she writes these really cute blog posts. For example, she did one that went viral about a year ago called Eddie the Terrible, about a small chihuahua that only a special person could love. And it went really viral because she was talking about how bad the dog was, and the dog was one of their most requested adoptees that they'd ever had. And so that worked out really well. The dog got adopted. It raised a lot of really good publicity for other animals that needed to be adopted as well. So I maintained contact with them, and that's how they got in touch with me. And the good news is, for your listeners, is they are still accepting applications for other people that have had a really special experience in their life with a pet, that where the pet has really changed that person's life. So anybody who's interested should go to mutualrescue.org and you know, really read through the website. And if they're interested in it, they have a compelling story, they should share it, because they might get picked to do a video also. And then the spill out of this video in my life has been remarkable. First of all, they sent out a professional film crew from Chicago, and I'd never seen any of this Hollywood stuff before, so I was really fascinated by this, and it was very impressive. These guys came out, and we did 2 days worth of filming and running on the local trails. I live here in Spokane, so I got to run on the local trails for a couple of days next to the Spokane River while all this was going on. In addition to the interviews, they had and all the special equipment. So it was a really unique experience that I had a great time doing, and I learned a lot from. One of the most interesting parts was somebody in my neighborhood started a rumor with all this, because there's all this activity going on. Somebody started a rumor that I was an astronaut. And ever since then, every time that I take Jake for a walk, little kids come up and they ask when we're going to the moon. So it's created a lot of interesting dialogue in the neighborhood, and, you know, it's a lot of notoriety that I really appreciate. So it's been a very special experience for me.
That's funny. I can't help but wonder if the Korean guy has ever seen the video.
I have no idea. I would hope, but it's really remarkable what happens when you go viral like this. I was in my health class, at my health club in an exercise class the other day, and the instructor recognized me, and then suddenly, you know, she announced that to the entire room, and it was I became famous within my exercise class, whereas before I was just like a regular guy. So it's been very interesting how all this has shaken out. Also, I wanted to let your listeners know that I'll be on the Rachel Ray Show next week.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so they're flying both me and Jake to New York. They got us both airline seats, first class, so very appreciative of that. So we're going to New York, and both Jake and I are going to be on the show. They're doing a show about obesity and people that have lost a lot of weight, like a huge amount of weight. The other guy on the show with me is going to be the recent person who won the Biggest Loser. So it's going to be the two of us on Rachel. I don't know when the segment's going to air, but we're taping it on Wednesday, so it should be pretty easy to find out.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah, maybe, you know, I mean, and it can just even get better from this, because, you know, once you start the plant-based thing, that's a whole new story, you know, because it's such...
It really is, and this has opened up so many opportunities. The food editor at the Spokane Spokesman, which is our local neighbor, a paper, has made an appointment. She's going to come out and interview me, and I'm going to make her a vegan paella, and she's going to write about that and put it in the paper here also. So there's so many wonderful opportunities are opening up for me to talk about plant-based nutrition and helping independent shelters, humane societies and shelters, in their mission to rescue dogs. And one other thing, if I can say also, there's over 13,000 shelters, pet shelters and humane societies and animal rescue organizations in the United States, and each of them just work hard and struggle on a daily basis to do everything that they do to meet their budget and their payroll, and to take care of their animals and to adopt out their animals. And I just want to make sure that everybody knows that none of these 13,000 individual organizations that are saving animals' lives on a daily basis, none of them are supported by the national organizations like the Humane Society of the U.S. or the ASPCA. Those are lobbying groups that do a good job in what they do, but donations to those national organizations do not filter down to these local organizations. I just wanted to make sure that everybody was aware of that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, we have something in common in that I have two rescue German shepherds, and
oh, wow.
I've always run with my shepherds. So we had one. It started out one got old, and then one started running less, and then they also like to play frisbee. So one would get kind of retired to just frisbee in the yard, and now we actually have two that run, so I actually make loops in the morning. I've done both of them, but it can get a little hairy at times, and I have had a couple crash and burns. But so I run a loop with one and come back and reload with the other, and we go. And, it is a wonderful thing because I know regardless, I do marathons and triathlon, and, some days you wake up and you think, oh, I'm just really too tired for this. But I never, you always wake up and you say, the dogs really need this. They're high energy dogs, and they need their exercise too. So, rain or shine, there we go. And, it's the best part of my day, running with them, and the sun comes up, and I just, when I get into my little cul-de-sac, I take their leash off and let them run, and they are so happy, So if that can't make you happy in the morning, nothing will.
I'm telling you, and the best part about running in the morning is the increased sense of self-respect and just the endorphins that you have going on and everything all day. I mean, it just completely improves and opens up my day, which is why I always run in the morning rather than at night, because I always feel that if you run at night, you kind of waste the effect somewhat. So I really get a lot out of running in the morning, and I completely hear what you're saying. And it's also very interesting what you're saying about running with two dogs at the same time. I don't know how you do it without them getting all tangled up.
Well, it's funny because one of my dogs kind of likes to run behind me, and one of them likes to kind of run in the front. So they're pretty good at that, and they kind of, it's funny. They're creatures of habit as well. They pick their spots, and but it's when we see other dogs or other things, and one's just a recent adoptee, so she's, a little bit more apprehensive if a car comes or whatever. So it's just got, it's easier for them to, and I kind of like that they get their own special attention. So, I run one and the other one. And then I think as the marathon training progresses, then, they may get a second loop, as far as, usually I would run one, they get up to about 6-7 miles each. And then I, maybe do a last loop by myself. But, I'm thinking, especially this young one, she's got enough energy. She could probably take a break and go out again.
Absolutely. And you're right about the dog needing to be run. I mean, Jake is a mix of Labrador and Rhodesian, and he's just super high energy. And when I don't run him, he pretty much lets me know that we have to go outside and run. He'll body slam me if inside of my place if he wants to go outside and run. So I run with him early in the morning. We our usual is about 6 miles, but we are doing half marathons now, and that's about it. I think as far as I'm going to take him is a half marathon, but he's comfortable doing that distance, no problem.
Yeah, I've spoke with another person just via email that I saw online that was running with his dog, and he, same similar type dog. He takes 13 miles pretty, as your dog, 13 miles pretty easy. And actually, he had an overweight lab that I think the lab lost 20 pounds, and has again become the runner dog. And I think it's better for their joints to become active, just like adults. I think they stay in better shape, and it's good for them all around. I live in Florida, so when it gets hot in the summertime, we try to get done before it gets daylight for the most part with the dogs. And, I don't want them to get, they certainly don't like the humidity so much, but they do good,
No, I agree. And I think you're right on the joints issue. All of my joint pain and back pain went away when I lost my weight and started running. Even after I lost weight before I started running, I still had some residual back issues and things like that. It's the opposite of what people think. People think that when you run, you're wearing out your joints or something like that. It's incorrect. The way that I see it, you're putting everything in a proper alignment, and you're really strengthening your joints. And I haven't had any back problems or joint problems since I began running. I've never felt better in my life.
getting back to the plant-based nutrition thing, when you first, the naturopathic doctor, when she first presented that to you, and of course, and now as you look back, you know, your love with Jake and Petey first and then Jake, you know, can you ever imagine, you know, why we love dogs? You know, there's a book by Melanie Joy on carnism, you know, why we love dogs, I think, wear pigs right. and eat cows or something like that. You know, I messed it up, but her name is Melanie Joy. And I know, you know, I grew up in West Virginia. You know, I wasn't plant-based growing up. And, you know, but always a dog lover, animal lover, and never made the connection. And, you know, now it seems crazy not to make the connection.
That's one of the things that was a life-changing experience for me with Petey and made me, I think, my relationship with Petey made me fully conscious and awake for the first time in my life, because it dawned on me in going through this process, what was the difference between Petey and a pig or a cow or any other kind of animal? And I really wasn't able to answer that question. There wasn't any. So it didn't seem to me to be logical that I could eat bacon or beef any more than I could eat Petey. They all seemed to me to be the same thing. So I started in my case, a lot of times when I talk to people about this, especially in the plant-based vegan community, the first question you get from a lot of people you talk to is, what kind of vegan are you? Because the reason that they ask that is there are health vegans, there are animal rights vegans, and there are environmental vegans primarily. And people are, so when somebody asks me that question, I say that I'm all kinds of vegan, because I started out as a health vegan. And I think that this is really the best way to reach people. You've got to reach people at some level in starting this on what's in it for them or what's really in their best interest. So after I found that just going to a plant-based diet was not only a magical cure for everything that I had. I mean, I reversed type 2 diabetes, got my cholesterol down from between 300 and 400 down to like 118 total. My blood pressure is like 100/60. Just all these amazing benefits from all these like over $1,000 worth of drugs that I was taking per month on just the copay that I was paying. It was ridiculous. Now the only medication that I'm on is Advil on occasion when I need it, but that's it. So from all these things, there are all these different types of vegans that people identify with, but, you know, the way that I look at it is it doesn't really matter, because they're all accomplishing the same thing, and an animal doesn't care why somebody isn't exploiting them and eating them. They only care that it's not happening. So I'm very much an encouragement of somebody being either a health vegan, or they can be an animal rights vegan, or they can be an environmental vegan. Or what my thesis here is, my argument is that it doesn't matter what your primary interest is, as long as you're committed to the cause, you're accomplishing the same thing.
I think that's good. So now, you know, I agree. I'm kind of with you on all of the points. And, you know, when I talk to my patients, obviously I try to go at it from a health standpoint. But then after I kind of have them on board, I try to keep them on board, you know, introducing the ethical standpoint and the environmental standpoint. But I think it helps to have that connection, because it keeps you in line and it keeps you from falling off that this is just not a nutritional thing and that I can, right. You know, I don't really have to, I can, you know, I can kind of change my mind.
I agree 100%. And this is what some people object to the plant-based or veganism of President Clinton is, you know, I've seen interviews where he says, well, he still eats a bite of turkey or something on occasion. And that's the way that I look at it is, I think in my case, if somebody had just been practicing in-your-face activism regarding animal rights veganism, I would have never come over. But by understanding how much this changed my life and doing this in connection with an animal that I'd rescued from my humane society, and for the first time, because I'd never had a pet before, and for the first time in my life, forming a personal relationship, a bond with an animal It was stronger than anything that I'd ever experienced before with a human being. It caused me to look into this animal's soul and him back into mine. In between that, it then caused me also to become an animal welfare vegan as well. And then through learning about all the benefits that accrue to society and the world and animals and everybody else, if everybody was on a plant-based diet, we would save approximately $1 trillion in healthcare costs per year. We would alleviate world hunger. We would fix the current environmental catastrophe that we're now in. And just as a country, the United States, we would no longer be killing 10 billion animals per year for food when it's completely unnecessary. Because, as I've established, you could be just as satisfied or more satisfied eating a complete plant-based diet. I'm very happy eating this way, and I would never consider going back because it would seem gross to me to eat animal flesh or the lactation of a cow anymore. But just all these things could really fix most of the problems that we have with the world. And by doing whatever we can to help people understand that it's really worth their while to do this, and they'll accrue some form, they'll accrue a great personal benefit out of this also, because they'll be much happier and healthier if they do this. Then they'll also at the same time make animals happy and the planet happy and everybody happy. It's what we should all be focused on.
How about, your friends, they must be they must have become quite inquisitive.
It's an amazing thing, because I dropped all that weight, about 140 pounds in less than a year. And the first thing that you get is people concerned that you have cancer or something because you're losing a lot of weight. That's a common reaction. And then there's just a spillover effect for several years afterwards, where people that you've known for a long time, but they hadn't seen you since you lost the weight, you meet them and they don't know who you are. And I still on occasion run into people. This is like 6 years now. I still on occasion run into people that don't know who I am and can't believe that I look the way that I look compared to how I used to look. And it's a lot of fun every time that it happens. So then as a part of that also, as you mentioned, there's a lot of interaction with people that are also obese, because as you know, 2/3 of the people in this country are either obese or overweight. So there's a lot of interaction, and people want to know how you did it and what they can do to accomplish the same thing. And my explanation of them is pretty clear, and that is that, or as part of this process, I've undergone like a lot of personal education, taken a lot of night school classes. I took essentially the first year's worth of pre-med classes at a local community college just to learn a lot more about this. And part of that, like, you know, chemistry and biology, anatomy, physiology, some physics, things like that, and chemistry. So what I learned was, in a food science class, that the most remarkable thing that I learned is all of the packaged food that's sold in this country is designed to be as addictive as possible. So what they do is they get like a focus group of individuals, and they run by different food samples by them, and the ones that they have the hardest time putting down, or people want to eat the entire box, that's the formula they go with to make a new food. So the entire food system in our country has become one of maximizing the addictive properties of food. And this is no longer nutrition. This is commercialization that is intended to be unhealthy for people and to addict them to foods. This is not the type of food that people ate 100 years ago. It's an entirely different thing now. And, if people go back to like a more rural type of style of eating that people practiced in the past, they're going to be a lot healthier. And if they eliminate meat as part of that, they're going to be much healthier. They're going to get a significant reduction in the risk of cancer, strokes, Alzheimer's, and all these other like diseases and maladies that cause people to, you know, die or get cancer or become sick or miserable, you know, around 60 years old or so, versus you know, the natural life of our bodies. I think that the natural life of people, that our bodies are intended to make it to about 100, as best as I can tell. Now, if you want to get to 100, as I do, there's two ways that you can get there. You can get there on machines and life support and medication and being miserable and unhappy and just being in pain all the time, or you can do so joyfully with good nutrition and the knowledge that you're not harming other creatures and the planet and everything else at the same time. So this is what I'm a big proponent of.
When you get on an airplane now and you see the person needing the seatbelt extension, what goes through your mind?
You know, I feel compassion toward them. I really, truly do. I feel compassion, and I feel badly for them because they haven't heard how simple it is to change their life and get out of that situation. And, you know, I look for opportunities not to preach to people, but if they ask, like, for it's wonderful now because of my video, I can just strike up a conversation and say, you know, oh, I was in this recent video, you know, would you like to see it? And then I don't have to, it's nothing about fat shaming, and I don't have to, you know, chastise them or admonish them in any way. I can just use this video in a way that I can attempt to help them without me trying to sound like a know-it-all or intervening in their life or telling them that they need to make a change in their life. I think that the best way to attract people to our plant-based lifestyle and to help animals by adopting animals to achieve the weight loss and health results that I have is not by telling people what to do, but by getting people to want to be like we are. So being a good example for others that others will want to follow.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. People have to want what you have in order for, you know, them to change. I went to a conference, my first plant-based nutrition conference a year ago, and, you know, the one thing that I took away was that in this room there were about 700 people that were on board, you know, and happy about it and energetic about it and looked healthy. And then when you went out into the hotel lobby, you know, you started to see people that weren't as healthy. And then when you went to the airport, then all of a sudden you saw the rest of America that had no idea about the secret that was in that room to being healthy and happy and not having to suffer. And, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing that it's such a well-kept secret. It's a shame that it's such a well-kept secret. And, you know, when people come into my office, like, you know, of course, you know, I kind of have to be the preacher. You know, they come in for their blood pressure or their chest pain, or, you know, they've had a bypass or may need something, the clearance to have some procedure done. And, mm-hmm. you know, especially when people come in that want gastric bypass and they want cardiac clearance to have a gastric bypass. And I can't help myself but to stop and say, well, wait. You know, have you ever, I know that you've been through a million different diets and I know you've tried, you know, your wit's end, but, you know, have you ever considered, you know, giving this a shot? You know, you can just, you know, give this a shot for a couple weeks, a month, and see what happens, you know, before, you know, you go down this road. And it's a difficult sell. It really is a difficult sell.
No,
because nobody
I,
else...
I agree. In my case, I was about a month away from bariatric surgery before I tried this plant-based diet. This was like my last-ditch effort, and based upon the initial results that I had, I canceled that and just went with a plant-based diet, and that's when my life changed, and everything in my life changed and improved. So I'm so glad that I didn't have a larger part of my stomach removed and all that. But it's unfortunate that people that don't grasp or see the option of living without eating meat and chicken and fish and dairy, they think that that is something that's major. And I think that, you know, the folks that did Forks Over Knives, I think, put it best. A plant-based diet is not extreme. What's extreme is having your chest split open so that you can get stents put in and have a heart operation so that you can continue to live. It's much less extreme to just cut out all that crap that caused that problem in the first place so that you can live a happy, normal life. I'm convinced at this point that our bodies were not, you know, intended to live on meat. It's like when I was in the Army, I knew that, you know, in an emergency, you could pour kerosene into the gas tank of a Jeep and it would run. Well, it wouldn't run very well, and after that, the engine would be ruined, but if you had to get somewhere in an emergency, you could do that. That's how I look at meat. Yeah, our body can digest it, but it's really not healthy for our body.
How much did you weigh when you were in the Army?
I was a little bit chunky, but I went in when I was 17, so I trimmed up in there. It was after I got out of the Army around age 20 that I was I really started getting heavy. So based upon the exercise and the forced marches and everything else we had to do in the Army, that kept it down. But, you know, that was also at age 17, you know, at that part of your life, that's not when you start really reacting to a poor diet. It's as you get older. So when I started when I was 340 pounds, I was 51 years old. And that's just, as I said, when everything had snowballs. But now at 56, I'll be 57 this year. I am in better health than I've ever been in my entire life. I feel like I'm 25 years old. I can compete athletically against 25 year olds. And I've just not just the health benefits and just the knowing that I'm healthy and not having to go to the doctor or do doctor's appointments except for once a year for physical, but just my state of mental health and happiness has never been greater also. And that's the other half of the main benefit that I don't think that people talk about often enough is the happiness and the feeling of joy and everything that's associated with having really high energy and really high mental clarity and feeling good and feeling attractive about yourself and, you know, no longer being invisible to people of the opposite sex and just really, you know, feeling good about yourself. I can't put enough emphasis on that. It's a wonderful thing. It really is. I went when I was obese without going on a date for 15 years doing anything. And just really had kind of given up on life roughly from 35 to 50. And since all this has happened, you know, I know that my level of mental health is much better. I know that I'm a much happier person. I know my job, my professional career has really skyrocketed because, you know, I'm in sales, and I think that now I track people. People want to be around me versus people have to talk to me to get something done. There's a huge difference in how I'm treated by people and how people react towards me. And it's just really made me a lot happier. It's created like a lot of wonderful experiences. So that's really the other half of doing all this and getting in good shape through a proven sustainable program as I've done, which simply comes down to get an accountability partner. If you're living alone, and you have become isolated, and you've become obese, and you're unhealthy, and you're taking all these medications, and life is a struggle, and you're unhappy, the way to solve this is by making a commitment to go down to your local humane society, adopting a shelter dog, one that will need to be walked every day, and then getting in contact with a local plant-based healthcare provider, and you can find them either a naturopathic doctor or an MD, but somebody that really knows what they're doing and has gone to school for. And I would like to say also that the term nutritionist is not legally protected in any way. Anybody can call themselves a nutritionist. I could call myself a nutritionist and go out and sell services tomorrow if I wanted. However, people need to be really careful about who they're talking to, because there are a lot of people practicing and saying, calling themselves nutritionists that don't necessarily know what they're talking about, or maybe espousing non-generally accepted things, like, you know, just some, there's some crazy stuff out there. So by going with an MD, a naturopathic doctor, or somebody that has, is really well known as being somebody who knows what they're talking about regarding nutrition, I think that that's really important also.
Yeah.
But you can't do it alone. So what I'm saying is you need to take a partner, and the partner needs to be a medical professional that knows what they're doing, and in my case, a shelter dog, because by living by myself, you have to have an accountability partner, somebody who's going to force you to get outside, because forcing you to get outside and stop being a recluse and getting back into life and society is a necessary component of making all this work.
Maybe that's my next step is I get a bunch of dogs, and so when people come to the nutrition course, I say, okay, here's your dog.
Or, you know, take them down to the Humane Society. But it's also equally important to note that getting a dog is a commitment, and it should be viewed as a lifetime commitment for the animal. And it's not one that, okay, if you're going to move, you need to find a place that will accept the dog. You can't say, well, now I have to surrender the dog because my new landlord won't accept dogs. That's not good enough. You need to find a place that will accept dogs before you move into a new place.
Yeah, it's being involved with the German Shepherd Rescue, it's really sad. You know, again, German Shepherds are big, hairy dogs, and
they are,
you know, so people get them, and when they're really, really cute puppies, and so, but they're only puppies for about 6-8 weeks, and then they're a big, hairy dog, and a lot of times they're big, hairy, active dogs. So if you know they're not lap dogs, they need to be walked, run, and played with, and trained, and socialized, and a lot of people end up turning them in because they're more than they, you know, had anticipated, and it's really, really sad.
Yeah, and what happens is that a puppy will turn into a 100-pound puppy if it's not just given some little basic training, and there's, you know, 5 or 6 things that you could do. You don't have to try to train a puppy to become like a kennel show dog or a circus animal or something like that. That's not the point. You can train a puppy so that it still retains all of its personality, but is going to be calm under certain circumstances. Like instead of, you can train a dog not to jump up on people and not to tear things up and to not pull on a leash. And it's fairly simple to do just by some repetitive practices when the behavior occurs. So the problem is with the puppy, when people just, oh, look cute, it's just running around and it's biting things and it's just doing whatever it wants without any guidance at all. Unless you provide that puppy some guidance in form of just some basic repetitive training, it'll then grow up to be a full-size dog that's out of control and it's hard to handle. And unfortunately, that's when people surrender their animals, is because they didn't do a good job when the animal is puppy.
Yeah, my one shepherd. There's actually my one running partner here. She's under my feet right now. Matter of fact, I can't get my feet under my desk because she wedges herself inside the hole in my desk, and that's kind of where she spends. She comes to work with me every day. And she spends most of her time there, except when patients say, you know, where's Samantha? And so I say, Samantha, and she comes out and let them pet her. So she kind of has the roam of the office when she wants to. And she's, you know, she's been sleeping for the last couple hours. We ran this morning. Usually at lunchtime, we go out and have a Frisbee game. And then she comes back and she sleeps some more. And then we go home and have some Frisbee games, you know. And but, yeah, she's a wonderful, wonderful companion. But, you know, she needed to be socialized and she needed to, you know, like you say, have some, you know, basic training so that, you know, she knows how to behave just like a child would know how to behave at a restaurant.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another great thing. When I, both of my dogs that I adopted adult dogs. Like Petey was 7 years old when I got him. And now Jake was 4 when I got him. So Jake was in his prime. And I encourage people not to just only concentrate on getting a puppy, because a puppy is a lot harder than adopting an adult dog. Most often adult dogs have been, you know, at least they're generally all housebroken, and they have gotten over like certain puppy tendencies for the most part. So I call it, like, I prefer to get a used dog than a new one because they're going to be easier, and somebody else has often done, like, a lot of work for me. And all I have to do is make, you know, some corrections to the behavior, but we can do that as we go along. And when you adopt an older dog, they know that you saved their life, and they absolutely know it. And the way that they look at you and love you and appreciate you, you can tell that every day of the rest of your life. That dog is going to consider you to be the greatest person who's ever walked the face of the planet. And it just makes you feel wonderful. It really props you up, and it gives you the greatest self-confidence. And then, you know, you caring for the dog and exchanging the love and responsibility back and forth, that's what really all caused me to break out of the bad situation that I'd fallen into and become the person that I am now. So a rescue dog saved my life.
Yeah, we always say, who rescued who, right?
Well, definitely. Who rescued who? Did he rescue him or me, or did I rescue him? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, they're great friends, and I loved your story, and I love you taking time to speak with me, and I certainly want you to give me a link back, or when you find out when the Rachel Ray show is going to be on, and so I can see how that goes and find out how Jake's airplane ride goes.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how Jake will do on TV. So we'll see next week for sure. I'm definitely going to bring along some treats, though, just in case.
That's doesn't Rachel Ray have a dog food line? Does she have a dog food line?
She does. She does have a dog food line, and she is also committed to rescuing dogs, and she has a pit bull that she rescued.
Yeah. So Jake should be right at home when he gets there, as far as treats go. So,
yeah, I hope so. That'd be awesome.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking time, and you know, congratulations on your journey. It's wonderful. I'm just blown away. It's such a nice story, and it should be a Disney movie. It's really, really good. And
thank you so much.
Good luck.
I really appreciate you reaching out to me, and thank you so much. And if you could send me a link of the show, I would love to publicize it also.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. Such a nice story. You know, when you talk about take-home messages from the chat with Eric, you know, it comes down to who rescued who. Petey rescued Eric. Eric rescued Petey. I feel the same way about my dogs. They help me get out in the morning, and I try to provide a good home from them. And you know, we're best friends. So think about it. If you're out there to get an accountability partner, whether it's a dog or a friend down the street that you know that's going to help you get out the door and, you know, maybe help you on your plant-based journey. And, you know, it comes down to give somebody, you know, paying it forward or helping someone else can go a long way to helping yourself. And sometimes we get our head out of our own problems, it helps us kind of clear the path, help somebody else. And, kindness goes full circle, whether it's with a dog or helping somebody else with their plant-based journey or cooking them a plant-based meal. So don't be so afraid that people won't like you if you're plant-based and you've changed your way. Cook for them and do some things just for them, without really making much of a deal of it. And you might turn around and help somebody else and they'll feel good about it. So I hope you enjoyed the podcast with and the interview with Eric. If you want to find Eric on Twitter, he's at Eric_O'Gray. And I'll leave that show notes. His website is Eric and Petey. It's PEETY.com. And certainly look for him on the Rachel Ray Show. I think it's going to be aired in May. So make sure you look that. You can also, Google Eric O'Gray and the NPR. You can see the video. Maybe I'll try to get a link to that where he's they filmed him running with his dog. It was such a heartwarming story. Really do Just think it's such a special story, you know, and it's a feel good thing. It's a 5 or 7 minute Disney movie, so to speak, you know. The site where he did his contest was mutualrescue.org, and I'll leave a link to that as well. If you want to get a hold of me, it's jamiedelaney@gmail.com. It's jamiedelaney@gmail.com. My website is drdelaney.com. If you found this on iTunes, I love a good review on iTunes. I hope you keep listening. If you want to do one of my courses and you're in Florida, we certainly have 6-session courses down here that we do nutrition. I like to teach and cook in the class. I'm also launching a 30-day kind of kickstart challenge where we do an intensive weekly dietary counseling, menu planning, as well as the 6-week hooked on to that. So I think that'll give people that really want to get off their medications quick a way to do that. And so I'll keep you informed of as things come along. So look forward to seeing you next week. Be plan strong, run long, get some sunshine, and pay it forward if you get a chance.